This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Annie Fry Show.
What do you say to Vladimir Putin?
Well, look, he has made clear that the answer is, I believe he has in the past essentially acknowledged that he was, there are certain things that he would do or did do.
Unedited, off script.
Gosh.
Joe Biden.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Oh, yeah, that was real. That happened.
Wow. I got a little nervous letting that much time of that dead air happen, but I'm like, that needs to stay.
That was legit.
That I did not take out anything.
No.
That was legit the time from the question being asked.
Wow.
Him kind of saying, and then all of the dead air.
I saw that live. It was cringeworthy.
Yikes.
Let's see what J.J. Carafano thinks about the leader of the free world and how he's doing these days. Joining us now on the Annie Fry Show, J.J. Carafano, at J.J. Carafano on Twitter, heritage.org as well. Jimmy, good afternoon. I speak to you all the time, don't I, throughout the week. So I'm hosting for Annie Fry today. It's great to talk to you.
I know. You know, it's like I'm doubly blessed because we've been waiting for this, and her baby is absolutely
yes.
Beautiful and gorgeous. And I'm just a tad behind. I've been a grandpa for 4 days now.
Whoa!
So we're a couple of days behind her, but we're trying to catch up.
Congratulations, Jim. That's fantastic news. That's
so
good stuff.
You want the good news or let me give you the good news first.
Okay.
Which is the dopey grandpa thing totally works, right? This, you know, I'm just, you know, a nice old Joe Biden.
Yeah,
Uncle Joe. We saw the latest polls. I mean, globally, America's more popular, you know, Biden has a lot to do with that. Domestically, is the same. I think his personal ratings are still fairly, but, and that's not the first time we've ever seen a president do that. You know, Eisenhower, you know, famously came to office kind of with the cardigan sweater and the kind of the folksy grandpa thing. And as the Cold War was heating up, he was really trying to calm America down by just having this kind of very, you know, fatherly image. The difference is behind the scenes, Eisenhower ruled with an iron hand and drove some of the most effective bipartisan policy in modern history. Nobody thinks Joe Biden is really running the supermarket cart going down the aisle. He is the little kid, you know, sitting in the basket, you know, with the steering wheel that thinks he's driving the cart, I think.
Yeah, I get it. I agree. Jim, I look at this as a huge missed opportunity, you know, and whether or not you totally agreed with Donald Trump's approach, I felt like he accomplished things at this summit. And I'm looking around and I'm going, where's Biden? What's he doing? Is he saying anything? Are we doing anything? Maybe that's good because I look at what he's done with executive orders and trillions of dollars of spending, and that's all bad. So maybe we don't want him to do anything on the world stage. But on the other hand, Do we want any of these other clowns running the show, running the circus? And I, and Putin and Xi have got to be sitting around just grinning like Cheshire cats these days.
Well, I think these meetings are largely, you know, G7 and these other things are largely meaningless. And I'm not sure that the difference of the personality between Trump and Biden makes that much difference. What I do think makes a big difference is how they acted. I mean, we live in an age of great power competition. That's what these guys really look at. How do people use power? Not what they say, not what finger do they wave, you know, but what do they actually do? And I think people came away with Trump realizing that here was a president that was going to defend America's interests, and if you butted heads with him, he was going to butt back.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Biden, they sense a very disconnected, disengaged president who, despite all the fluffy talk about, you know, working with friends and allies and you know, speaking truth to adversaries, the reality is, I think, both our allies and our enemies came away from this week thinking, this is a guy that we can get over. How can we take advantage of him?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jim Carafano, Heritage Foundation's Vice President for Foreign Policy and Security Policy. The one thing that they've said this week that I want to get your opinion on, because it involves COVID, it involves China. We're always talking about China. Do you think they'll actually work together? I mean, you're just saying, well, action is one thing, talk is another. But that was the one sort of headline that I'm like, well, will they push for that, or is that just more talk?
Well, I think that was actually one of the weakest moments. You know, essentially they said is, we want to press the WHO to investigate, and we want the Chinese to cooperate. So they literally endorse the two things that they know will never happen. That, to me, actually says they're not serious about actually confronting China.
Mm-hmm.
Because fairy dust, you know, and magical thinking does not move the world. You know, if on the other hand, they wanted to really hurt the Chinese, and they all stood up and said, you know what? None of us think that it's a good idea to host the Olympics in a country that's in the middle of an ongoing genocide and unleashed a pandemic on the world. We all want to have the Olympics in a different place. That would have gotten China's attention.
Yes.
That would have shown leadership. But the fact that they did that, and that's an easy layup. The fact that they didn't know that shows that this is not. Look, when somebody says, we're thrilled to have you as part of the club, what the heck does that mean? It means, you know, this is just a bunch of good old boys talking and girls talking to themselves and not really interested in really asserting global leadership.
Jim, continuing to speak about China here, I find it fascinating that, you know, while Joe Biden's at the G7 summit, while Russia and China don't seem to have much respect for him, a lot of the quote conspiracy, well, things that the U.S. national legacy media labeled conspiracy theories during the pandemic, mainly just because Donald Trump talked about them or suggested them, are now being supported as fact or potential fact by some very smart and astute people like the former CDC director Redfield, who came out with breaking news today saying, you know, the Wuhan lab leak prognostication holds a lot of water and needs to be investigated, and the WHO should not be doing that. The Wuhan lab leak theory is to be trusted. The WHO is to not be trusted. And so we're now resetting the entire apple cart of this whole discussion. Finally, you know, maybe a few months too late.
Yeah, I mean, here's the dynamics. And again, these aren't partisan comments because, you know, I don't belong to a political party. I'm not a partisan guy. This is an observation of what's actually going on. What you just described is symptomatic of the whole litany of issues of the Trump years, where literally the mainstream voices, whether they were in media or politics or punditry, were just wrong, either deliberately or because if Trump was for something, they were the opposite. But they mm-hmm. were consistently wrong on literally everything. Mm-hmm. Trump was not an anti-Semitic. He was not a racist. He was not colluding with Russia. He did not pressure the Georgians. He did not try to rig the elections. He did not inspire the January 6th. None of those things have factually turned out to be true. They were all wrong or just fabricated. These are the same people who have been covering Biden now on his trip to Europe and have been covering up for the vice president on her trip to the border, saying that this government's doing great. What a fresh breath of fresh air. They're not Donald Trump. I wonder if they are. And look what's actually going on in this country. My colleagues and I at Heritage just did a piece on this. It's in the Daily Signal. On all the top issues of the day, you know, everyone from Oprah Winfrey to The View to, you know, you name it, they're all spinning one narrative, and it's all a decidedly rigged pro-Biden narrative. But if you actually look what's going on today in all the big issues, Biden is on the opposite side of where Americans are. Border security, taxes, inflation, voter integrity, critical race theory. We can go down the list, and we listed like 12 major debates in America today where the Biden team says it's one thing, and no one is challenging them in this massive public sphere of echo chamber voices saying how great Grandpa Joe Biden is. But yet, if you look at where Americans are, they don't agree. And they know that this is wrong and it's bad for our country. That's what's going on in America today.
Yeah, Jim, I'm looking at this list of 12. One of them that stuck out to me, it's not necessarily foreign policy related, but I did want to ask you about it, school choice. That's one that seems to be, we talk about it a lot on this show, and you know, I think everybody's pretty excited about the direction the country seems to be moving, at least on the state level, with school choice. What is the argument against school choice? Like, if Biden and the administration's against it, why are they against that?
Well, you know what's really triggered, of course, conservatives have been, for school choice forever, but what's really triggered this among mainstream Americans, it was COVID.
Yeah.
And the fact that kids had to learn from home, that the school system failed them, the unions didn't want to go back to work, and they suddenly realized that there are better ways to do this, because they turn around and look, private schools are back in session, homeschooling is educating their kids. The only people that aren't getting educated are us that are stuck in public school, and the reality is this isn't a rich white people thing, because rich people, they go in where they need to go to get their kids educated. It's, everybody else in the country that's stuck in public schools. And so the simple idea of the money should follow the child and the parents should invest in where they think their child can get their best education, that went from an idea that was popular among, moms in the Midwest on farms into becoming a national movement. And it's all because of COVID. And when you ask, well, what's the counter argument? Well, the counter argument is we have to throw money at something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people just aren't buying that anymore.
Absolutely. Jim, one last topic I want to get with you was the fact that, we haven't talked about, we talked about China and Russia, but the other problem Joe Biden has that he won't confront, or maybe that he wants to jump willy-nilly into, is Iranian deal part two. And would you just remind our audience, why any deal with Iran based around the contours of what Barack Obama had, which Joe Biden, I believe, was intimately involved with or supported at the very least, and appears to now be jumping headlong into, why it's such a bad idea and why we should be running the other way from it?
Right. Well, there's two simple reasons. One is it cannot stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon because the Iranians already have all the infrastructure and capability they need to build a nuclear weapon. Their decision to whether to go nuclear or not is a political decision. It's not an infrastructure decision. So the Iran deal is structured around the infrastructure. We've already crossed the bridge and we're down the highway. So we cannot stop you cannot do a deal that can stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, period. If you do a deal, all that's going to mean is you're going to funnel a bunch of cash into Iran that's going to enable the regime to do bad things in the region. So where's the upside here? And the answer is there is not an upside. There is no deal they can do that the Iranians would do that's going to make things better for the United States, our allies in the region, or even the Europeans. It's just that simple.
Yeah, period, the end. Well,
but if somebody would look at me and say, well, come on, Jim, you're a jerk. Obviously, seriously, Kurt, what is your problem? Because obviously there have to be good reasons for doing this. Otherwise, why would Biden do that? And I would say, okay, explain to me the border then. Explain to me what good things are going to happen with open border policies that are flooding this country and completely undermining our ability to protect ourselves, to keep the world from moving here. Explain to me, and they can't.
Yeah.
So can't look me in the face and say, well, there's got to be some reason, mm-hmm. otherwise they wouldn't do it because something that stupid.
Yeah, it's a broken, dysfunctional worldview. That's what it comes down to. It's a disaster. I don't know. We'll see if we can hang on to 2022 and beyond. Well, Grandpa Carafano, thanks for bringing more Carafanos into the world. your family.
Yeah, and you know what? The world needs him.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Jimmy, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy.
At JJ Carafano, heritage.org. He's fantastic. Hey, we're going to take a break here, and we'll return. Happy to take your phone calls. I know it's very active YouTube feed. I think Facebook's been very active as well. Very active YouTube feed today, Katie. Yeah,
Facebook does not like us today for playing Roger Waters.
And you know, it's my fault. Well, I was playing some things. I was taking a gamble.
Apparently, a lot of people have jumped over to the YouTube chat page because I'm scrolling through this, and it is quite extensive. You can join us on there, youtube.com, The Annie Fry Show. Just search that on YouTube. You'll find the channel. I guess use that today, right, because Facebook doesn't like us today.
Yeah, Facebook doesn't like us, and it's actually just look up Annie Fry. So go ahead and look that up at YouTube, and you will be able to still chat, still see us, interact with one another, but hang out with us there until I get this Facebook situation figured out.
Yep. Everybody's hanging on YouTube today, and I see you all there. Thanks for being with us. We're here, and we continue on 97.1 FM Talk. It's the Annie Fry Show.
We'll be doing something that provides you the opportunity. We'll announce this later this week to have an electronic version of your paper version of vaccination. It's not a passport. It's not a requirement. It's just the ability now to have an electronic version of that paper version.
Right. I played that earlier, and I wanted to play it again because, Ryan, the EU is doing, they'll see Governor Newsom's electronic version of vaccine cards, but it's not a passport. They see that, and they're not trying to couch things in mysterious, nuanced language, are they?
No. And, I mean, as if everybody's going to go, oh, Gavin Newsom, that's not – oh, okay, that's a better –
That sounds great. Let's make another database.
Thing. Yeah.
Government database.
The EU thing, to me, is a is a bigger deal than California, because I think California still remains a state in the union. And within this union, there are too many states that are pushing back on the vaccine passport, like Florida, for instance, and states that have just outright banned them. I think hasn't Missouri already banned?
That was in the COVID tyranny bill.
We just did it.
We
right?
just did. The governor signed it today.
So there's just too many states because you'd need a passport kind of to go within the United States. I don't think you'd need one to stay. I mean, there's businesses and things that's going to affect in California, but to me the EU thing is a big deal because these are sovereign nations that are agreeing to do this together.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit frightening. It's also stupid on the heels of having no tourism when tourism is just about to bump back up.
Yeah, this should help tourism.
Yeah, how many Americans and people from outside the EU are going to be like, "Oh, EU, they have vaccine passports. Well, that's where I want to go right now."
So instead, I'll go to Epcot and see seven worlds in one day.
Exactly.
At Disney World.
Yeah, exactly.
Screw
do you,
EU.
Mind if I read a little bit from it?
Please do.
Yeah,
okay.
Please
so
do.
So the legislative process for the EU COVID-19 vaccine passports for travel has come to an end today. This was June 14th. After the presidents of the three main EU institutions, the Parliament, the Council, and the Commissions, signed the regulation at an official signing ceremony. It reads, "Our union showed again that we work best when we work together. The EU digital COVID certification regulations was agreed between our institutions in record time of 62 days. While we worked through the legislative process, we also built the technical backbone of the system, the EU Gateway, which is live since June 1st. So the legislation is signed. It is apparently a digital COVID-19 vaccine passport for travel.
Is it for... What about tourists? It's definitely EU citizens. What about foreign visitors?
I would think, now she's looking here, this may end up being wrong, but I would think that the point of it is to prevent outsiders from coming in and spreading the virus. I don't think it's just to control their own citizens.
The EU certificate will again enable citizens to enjoy this most tangible and cherished of EU rights, the right to free movement. Sign into the law today. It will enable us to travel more safely this summer. Today, we reaffirm together that an open Europe prevails. So that's what I mean, from what I can read, it's to their citizens. So I don't see anything about people traveling into the country.
Not yet.
Yeah, I don't see anything about that.
What a joke that it's talking about the right to free movement.
Right.
That they took away, and now they're saying, we're going to give it back to you, but with caveats, as if they're being benevolent in giving that right back to people that they took away.
The certificate is being issued to travelers who have been vaccinated with one of the vaccines approved by the European Medicines Agency, those who have recently recovered from COVID-19, as well as those who have been tested negative for COVID-19. According to the regulation, the member states are advised against imposing any extra travel restrictions in those holding such a document, unless in cases when the additional measures must be taken into consideration. So I only see it for people within the EU that are traveling.
Oh, good. And that's all they can do. Yeah. Velia papers. Well, you know, doesn't that sound like that? I'm sorry.
Yes, it does.
I hate to channel horrific things from our past and sort of, you know, if the leftists, of course, would tell me I'm conflating the Holocaust with, you know, no. I mean, this is big government invading. Whatever happened to the liberal adage of my body, my choice, get your hands off my health care? How come COVID-19 gets to disrupt all of that? How come that is? We have very serious transmissible viruses on this planet, such as tuberculosis, which thankfully we've largely, I believe, eradicated in our country, but it's still prevalent in other parts of the world. And nobody's ever decided we need to have a TB card, right?
Mm-hmm. I actually, it was crazy. I got vaccinated. I had my first first dose, I want to say 2 weeks ago. And my husband just recently got vaccinated. He had his first dose not long ago either. And he and I both came back with our cards. And we both were like, I know why we have this card, but it is so unusual that it's just like right here.
Just for COVID.
And like we have to keep it on us because we don't know what stores or what places are going to be like, are you vaccinated? Or are you not? And like you have to present this card with something that's medical that pertains to you on it. It's just a very wild thing.
For a non-FDA authorized vaccine, nobody puts that into the discussion. And, you know, I presume at some point they're going to clear this thing fully, because I know there are anecdotal cases and some people have definitely had some problems and there's been some deaths related to this. But, you know, I would like to see the total numbers, just like I think COVID itself was blown out of proportion. I'm sorry to say that. And yes, 600,000 Americans died, millions around the globe, but millions around the globe have died from other things. And we've never, here's my point, the reaction to this was of a scale and a magnitude stupidly greater than anything we've ever done in any similar situation, right? And you know why? Because this one was politicized. And no other pandemic in world history was politicized like this. And it was mainly to get Orange Man Bad out of the U.S. White House. That's what it all boils down to, because COVID-19 was a very sick, very old person's disease. And we never say that either. But it has a 99.5%+ recovery rate. What are we going to do when the real kahuna comes, is my question.
Yeah, we want to vaccinate kids now, too, because the recovery rate from COVID for kids is statistically 100%. I mean, it's crazy, but we want to put that in their arms, too. I'm going to make a prediction. The next conspiracy theory that everybody's kind of been either talking about openly or kind of, you know, well, now that nobody else is around, what do you think about these numbers? I bet the numbers is one of the next ones that people start to really scrutinize, because it's already starting to happen in little area, little pockets around the country. Yes. There's been one in Minnesota. There's been one in California, different counties that have looked at their COVID numbers and deaths, COVID deaths specifically, and said, you know what? Some of these are being counted erroneously. And I bet that 6 months from now, maybe a year from now, that'll be a part of the conversation, is did we even correctly track the numbers?
There's going to be so many studies and reexaminations of everything that happened over the last 18 months. And Ryan, you're right. They will get published, and CNN and MSDNC will absolutely ignore them.
Yes.
And most people will wander around in their little post-COVID fog thinking that the cloth diaper they wrapped around their face actually did something, that you could pick up COVID from the groceries you bought at the store. There's places that are still doing all this stuff. And what? It's great to be clean. Apparently, we were really dirty before March
I'm
of
sure
last
we
year.
Were, yeah.
So I think it's great that we're clean. But this virtue signaling and this COVID shaming that some places and parts of the country are still doing with, make sure you wash your hands, make sure you wipe this off, make sure you wash your hands 12 times, make sure you, wipe your tongue with a Clorox wipe before you eat, sit down and eat. I mean, maybe a penguin caused COVID. I mean, these things that people still believe that have been absolutely debunked, there's not nearly as much outrage about finding out the truth as there was about spreading the disinformation on the front end.
Yeah, people use fear to do it. I mean, if at the beginning, you remember, like we were all like, well, this is a big deal. Like, what is this? It's going on. I was skeptical from the beginning just because I approach everything in the world with skepticism.
And it didn't seem to be Stephen King's The Stand. Did you guys read the book, Stephen King's The Stand? The miniseries?
I've seen the movie, yeah.
So they've done two miniseries on that in the last. Anyway, Stephen King's The Stand would be as if, Ebola virus, right? Ebola virus is a killer, right? Ebola virus, very transmissible, 50% apparently mortality rate. The Stand is based on the premise of a viral contagion getting out with like a 90% kill rate across the globe. The end of humanity, except for the survivors. And they divide into two camps. And for as much of a leftist that King has become, The Stand has a very messianic premise to it.
Isn't it like the Antichrist in it or something?
The Antichrist comes to Earth.
So
the plague is the forerunner of the Antichrist coming to Earth. And the two camps that split up are the good and holy camp of flawed human beings who are good people, and the Antichrist camp with also some well-meaning people who just go down the wrong path. And of course, this is very funny. So the good people end up in like Boulder, Colorado, land of hippie love, I guess. And the bad people end up in, guess where? Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh,
that's
my
right.
goodness.
Sin City. Yeah.
Holy cow.
So the whole thing is very...
I'm going to have to read that.
It's a good... I read it like...
Buckle up. It's long.
Yeah, it's long.
Okay, maybe I won't.
But it's very good, and it's got a lot of messianic, end-time, apocalyptic kind of feel to it. And it has a good ending, but you literally go through hell to get there.
Golly.
It's a good tome. Let me bring in Don before we head to a break here. Don, good afternoon. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for checking in with us today.
Hey, how you doing?
Go right ahead. Yes.
Hey, you guys were talking about, employer or, like this no private healthcare information anymore.
Yes, sir.
And I've noticed, with me, my wife, my sons, and we're not planning on getting the vaccine. And I've noticed our employers are all sending out questionnaires. And, of course, they're anonymous. They have no idea who's responding to them. And they're all wanting to know, have you had the vaccine? Do you intend to get the vaccine? And they're kind of pushing it under the guise of, well, we're trying to find out if we can become a vaccine site and see who all is interested in this. And I'm thinking, the heck you are. And, so I feel like this is going to lead into them wanting to know all of my, health issues that are going on.
Sure.
And it's kind of scary what's coming because it's really none of their business.
Yep, it's the camel's nose under the tent. Yeah, couldn't agree with you more, Don. Thanks for calling the show. Really appreciate the comment. I got to get to a final break here, but I'm going to bring up the I do this every so often. We'll look at the COVID-19 dashboard for the state of Missouri because every day that we had some kind of new peak on the way up, we had to hear about it. But now that we're on the way down with dramatic drops every single week, we don't hear about that anymore. I hope we crush COVID completely and the media can't talk about it anymore and they'll be off to the next crisis with climate or whatever. But anyway, I'll have some good news for you, I promise, when we come back. And if you want to weigh in on our discussion in our last segment here, you're welcome to 314-241-9797, 314-241-9797, The Annie Fry Show. Tim Jones in the big chair all week this week, 97.1 FM Talk.
A little Young the Giant to wrap the day up.
Another good song. Superposition. I was trying to think of the song I was singing, I want to live in a house on a hill by the ocean. And I remember it's the band 888, which I don't know if they've done anything else, but that is a superb song.
And that is a total Tim Jones
It's critical
bumper
mistakes.
Music song. Yeah. And I'm going to try. I will find it. I'm going to find it here.
Is it my imagination or I don't know if I just haven't been listening to enough of my alt music in the last year. Has there been any good, like, Superposition's pretty new.
Yes.
By Young the Giant.
Mm-hmm.
I think we played yesterday, we played Glass Animals, Heat Waves. Mm-hmm. That's new.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys heard the song by The Killers?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know.
Great
the name of the song.
Song.
It's pretty good. They always seem to just make songs that are like, that's a good song.
Yeah.
Like, that, it doesn't blow your mind, but it's always a good song.
Solid song that when I hear that song, it reminds me of My Own Soul's Warning. It's called My Own Soul's Warning.
Yeah.
It sounds like a song that would play at the end of like an 80s epic movie, like when the credits are running.
Yes.
Kind of that, oh, you know, like, that's how it is.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the 80s cult classic Romancing the Stone. You remember Romancing the Stone?
Oh yeah, but I don't remember the song.
It's a song by it's going to drive me crazy. Romancing the Stone in credits song. It's one of those I can't find it here. Romancing the Stone, alto sax. It's like a
end title song by Alan Silvestri.
Yes. What was the theme song? Oh man, I don't remember. Yeah, whatever. End title. Alan Silvestri.
Whatever.
It's like a what was that band that was kind of atmospheric, kind of dreamy, big in the 80s? Roxy Music. Remember, you guys remember the band Roxy Music?
No.
So the song at the end of Romancing the Stone is not Roxy Music, but it's like, it sounds like Roxy Music. It's from that genre, that kind of electronica era.
Why is that, right? All I typed into Google was song at the end of R-O-M-A. And
yes.
And it finished Romancing the Stone.
Avalon. So Roxy Music's big top song was Avalon. Avalon. You can know that song. Yeah.
Maybe.
Avalon. So, anyway.
It sounds like you're singing Turn Around.
Is this the song you're talking about?
Let me see.
I hope it doesn't have any, cussing.
No, it doesn't. Okay, no, there's no cussing. No, what is this?
Flipping it.
Can I play something here? Let's see if I play something.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, let me see it. This is Roxy Music. This is a great segment. This is fantastic. I'm just like wandering.
Let's find the song that's in Tim's head and go.
Brain dead at the end of the show here. So
you can play whatever you want.
Okay, let me see if it's playing here. Is it? Oh, I got to turn the mute off. Here we go.
That's 80s for sure.
This is total 80s.
Is this the end title from?
You guys know this, don't you?
No.
I don't think I do.
The lead singer looks like the lead singer from Panic at the Disco, like an 80s version of him. Yeah.
This is the end credits song?
No, this is not. But it's what it sounds like. Yeah. Let me get to this.
This sounds like the end credits
song.
What? Not only do I not know this song, I don't even know the song that you're referring to that could be this song. And your
destination. This guy's like so like into himself.
Oh yeah.
Here we go. Avalon.
Oh yes, okay, yeah.
Come
yeah, yeah.
On.
No,
of
I
course,
don't know
of course,
it.
Course,
I'm not
I
that old.
I
yeah.
know it.
Yeah. Okay, now for the end title of Romancing the Stone.
I think I found it. I don't know.
I think I found it too.
I tried to play it, but then that wasn't it. I guess I didn't find it.
So I might have it right here. Let's see if this is it.
Oh, not that
that's
one.
What's that all about?
Hey, yo.
Hey, play the song, dude. Do you have it? Here it is. This is it.
Oh.
This is it. Can't you just see the credits?
Oh, yeah.
There go the credits. And they're on like a boat.
Yeah, I can see. I'm watching it.
Thank you to the guy holding the boom mic.
Yeah.
They're on a boat
kidding.
In the middle of
in the middle
New
of
York
Manhattan.
City.
The boat's on a trailer. Yeah.
Yes.
The Angelina. Yeah.
That's right.
There it is. You can just see the credits going. Yeah, the big 80s. The movie's over. Everybody pick up your popcorn and head for the side.
This is the song they play like right when the movie's over.
Right.
Then after this song ends and they still have so many more credits, they play the other song you just played. They always go the other way. We're like, then they play a slow song. They play a ballad.
Exactly. This is like the, okay, get your butts up off the seats.
Yep.
We got to clean the theater. Movie's over.
Remember, you just had a good time watching this movie.
Yeah, this is a great movie, everybody.
Oh my God.
It's my 80s DJ voice. Everybody.
We want to thank Mike Smith for his
Romancing
digital
contribution. Romancing the Stone, man.
Alan Silvestri.
I think I had that.
Yeah. Anyway.
I had that, I think.
Yeah.
If they made that movie today, same script, it would suck.
Yes. I think it would. And it was pretty cheesy.
Yeah, but it was great.
But it was great.
It was perfect
Michael
for
Douglas.
The time. Yeah,
Michael Douglas.
And was that, what's her name?
Boy, did he dominate the 80s. Michael Douglas, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was Wall Street, right? Wall Street, mm-hmm. Romancing the Stone.
Kathleen Turner,
yeah. I think he did, was there a Romancing the Stone 2?
I think so.
What is Romancing the Stone?
Oh, you don't know?
Oh,
what
it's
is
a...
It?
It's a
great, terrible, average, great
yeah.
movie.
Okay, perfect. That all makes sense. That all made so much sense.
Yeah, I'm gonna play a little My Soul's Warning from The Killers here, because you'll be like, yeah, that could run.
For us to work.
Here we gotta get through a little okay.
Here.
Blah blah blah.
Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas were both in Romancing the Stone 2.
Okay, pot up, see what's going on now.
What memories do you want to bring to
Why are they still talking? Here we go. Right? This is a brand new song. Doesn't this feel like the end of a movie?
Oh, yeah, it does. This sounds like the after the Peppy song
yes.
credit song.
Yes.
Sounds like a montage is coming up.
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to the
I don't know what's going on in the background here. Why this is a video. Yeah.
This is like a corporate training.
A
here
comes,
here comes. Song for a corporate training video.
Here we go. Head for the exits. You know?
There we go.
Yeah.
Don't forget your popcorn. We're not cleaning up.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah.
Oh, this is cool. I don't know that I've heard. I was thinking of a different new Killers song. Yeah. I don't think I've heard this one.
Yeah, so that's The Killers, My Own Soul's Warning. That's like when I first heard that song, that's a brand new song. Came out this
yes.
year,
mm-hmm.
I think. I think it was end of 2020, beginning of 2021. And I heard that song. I'm like, holy cow, that's like an end titles credit of a movie score as the credits are running. You
we
know?
Have to remember
of like,
that for tomorrow.
Of like some epic.
Yeah, we got to play that one tomorrow.
We gotta
you know what
tomorrow.
Else we should play tomorrow? We might get tagged on this one, though. The Weeknd. That's totally an 80s throwback song, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
It?
He's kind of a throwback
kind
of dude.
Yeah.
Blinding
you know?
Lights?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Everybody knows that one.
You know, two callers want to try to squeeze in here. Oh, wait. Maybe. David, good afternoon. I'm sorry. Oh, we're almost out of time. Go right ahead. Sorry about that.
Hey, well, listen, I enjoy your show.
Thank
Quick
you.
Song for you. Try Around the Sun by Poolside.
Okay. Okay.
And my own personal conspiracy theory
yes, sir?
About COVID is that the Chinese engineered this thing that it would only kill older people because they are not economically, they don't, you know, they're just a drag on society. They don't have any concern for human life.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anybody discuss that,
uh-huh.
but that's my own personal conspiracy theory regarding COVID.
Yeah, no, David, thank you very, very much. Sorry, I got to run, but you know what? The Chinese are the masters of population control. Up until like a year ago, they had a one-child policy. They are the masters of euthanasia and population control. We got one more song for us. Arnold, good afternoon. Go right ahead, my friend.
Real quick, I'm enjoying your show. Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, War of the Roses.
Yes, sir. Great. Another great flick from the 80s. That's a fantastic. God, that's a dark comedy.
War of the Roses. I don't know.
Yeah.
That one.
Arnold, thank you so much, Arnold. We got to run.
Guys.
Thank you. War of the Roses. They're getting divorced and living in they live in a mansion. And Danny DeVito is the lawyer, and they literally try to kill each other. It's a comedy. But it's a really dark one.
1989, so
1989.
Still an 80s movie.
Michael Douglas, master of the 80s. Hey, we got to wrap things up. We had a really fun show today. Thank you for everybody for calling in and chiming in on the YouTube channel. I'll be back tomorrow.
Yes.
Mark Reardon is up next. Ryan, thanks for everything. Katie as well. Great show, gang. Mark Reardon up next here on 97.1 FM Talk. Have a great Tuesday, y'all.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.